Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. It's Thursday. Jimmy Akin here for 2 hours of open forum. And we're delighted to have you here with us. Thanks for being with us. The number is 888-318-7884. Lines generally fill up quite a bit early when Jimmy is here. But you are welcome to call, whether you are a Catholic person or not a Catholic person. If you have a question about the Catholic faith, if you have a question about morals or philosophy or science or Bigfoot or anything else, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Jimmy Akin is the author of a whole bunch of books, including A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Be Becoming a Better Apologist, and The Bible is a Catholic Book. Hello, Jimmy Akin.
Hello, Cy Kellett.
Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday.
And I like Thursday because that means tomorrow a new episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World will drop.
Yeah, it also means groovy music.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, well, that depends. Is that right, Darren? Did we we don't know. It's a mystery.
It's a mystery. One of many in this world.
Well, it is a mysterious world.
Yeah.
But you have your own particular mysterious world. What will be the mystery tomorrow?
So tomorrow is a kind of potpourri of mysteries because it's a patrons question show.
So periodically
we ask patrons what are their questions, and they ask about a whole bunch of different mysteries. And so it's kind of like Weird Questions, except it has a little bit of a different angle, so people can check that out. And then the next 2 weeks after that, we will be doing a two-parter on real-life Haitian zombies. So zombies really exist.
Sometimes I'm not happy about the things I learn from Jimmy. I mean, sometimes I'm happy about the things I learn. Sometimes not. There's real-life Haitian zombies?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are recognized people in Haiti that person's a zombie.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel flabbergasted by the secret
organizations that try to create them.
All right. I guess we'll look forward to that. But tomorrow, do you read the questions? Dom reads the questions
and I answer them. It's, again, it's a lot like our Weird Question show.
Yeah. And it's just various mysteries they want to know about.
Yeah.
Is everybody asking about UFOs right now?
A lot of people are asking about UFOs. In fact, tomorrow morning I'm going to be on Father Mark Goring's YouTube show to talk about UFOs because we've got that UFO report coming out later this month from the Department of Defense, and NASA has just announced they're going to start taking UFOs seriously, and so lots of UFO news.
Yeah. Again, 888-318-7884, our number, 888-31-TRUTH. They call them IAPs now, though, right?
UAPs.
UAPs. What's a... Unidentified
Aerial Phenomena.
Yeah. Okay. UFOs. Unidentified flying object. Oh, so we don't know if they're... Why'd they take... Did they take UFO out because it just has got a bad reputation?
Because of the giggle factor, yeah.
Yeah. Topeka, Kansas is where we're starting. Bob in Topeka, Kansas, watching on YouTube Live. We're happy to have you, Bob. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Thank you very much for answering my call. I got challenged by an Anglican friend who is adamant that in Vatican I Council, the council adamantly called the Catholic Church the Roman Catholic Church, and my understanding was that was a unofficial title that we did, you know, we sort of took up when the Protestants in the 16th century started using it as a pejorative, and we did it as loyalty to the Bishop of Rome. Is there any document or any procedures that occurred at Vatican I that could have given some credence to that? Or is that just sort of like an overstatement?
Okay. It's an overstatement. So the term Roman gets used in Catholic documents in a variety of ways. You will not find it used as a general designation of our beliefs or of our church. So you won't find, like some Protestants, I'm sure you've heard Cy Kellett say things like the Roman Church or Romanists or things like that. And we don't use it that way. In when Catholics speak of the Roman Church, they mean the church in the city of Rome. So like I am not in the Church of Rome. I'm in the Church of San Diego. I would have to be in Rome itself to be in the Church of Rome. Now, the adjective Roman, though, does get used a little bit more broadly. It sometimes will be used to refer unofficially to the Latin Rite of the Catholic Church. And so you will hear about Roman Catholics, meaning members of the Latin Rite of the Catholic Church. But then there are lots of Catholics, fully in union with the Pope, who are not members of the Roman Catholic Church, like Melkite Catholics and Chaldean Catholics and Maronite Catholics and so forth. They're all Catholics, equally Catholic as anybody else, but they're not members of the Latin Rite or the Roman Rite. You will sometimes find Catholics using the term Roman Catholic for themselves, and that's more of a cultural thing. It is not an official thing. You are correctly informed that after the Reformation in England, the Anglicans began to use the term Roman Catholic as a general term for all Catholics. And the reason they wanted to do that was to kind of run them down. Because at the time, certainly, and fortunately this is improved, but at the time, Anglicans wanted to say, well, we're Catholics too, we're just not Roman Catholics. And so Roman Catholic became a bad thing in Anglican speech, and then more broadly in English-speaking Protestantism. Roman Catholic was, you know, considered a pejorative.
Right.
And some people would then lose sight of the fact that, like, hey, that's not our name for ourselves. And you'd even have, I've even in my own lifetime seen various Protestants say, ha, Catholic means universal. How can you be Roman Catholic? That's a contradiction. It's like, duh, that's not our name for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Many Catholics also are not familiar with the history of this, and so they'll call themselves Roman Catholic. I don't encourage that because it generates confusion, but, you know, it's something that happens. In terms of Vatican I, you will not find a document that says, we officially name ourselves the Roman Catholic Church and everyone in union with the Pope is a Roman Catholic. You won't find that. You will find the adjective Roman in some of the documents, but it at least most of the time is going to conform to the kind of usages that I started out by mentioning, either a reference to the church in Rome itself or to the Roman Rite of the Catholic Church, but not to the whole Catholic Church. At least that's not the general usage of the term.
Bob, thanks for getting us started there. Hope that was helpful for you. Our number is 888-318-7884. Jimmy Akin is our guest, and it's open forum both hours with Jimmy. Your calls are welcome. Let's see where we're going now. We're going to go all the way. Oh, we're going to New York. In New York, Kai, watching on YouTube. You are next up. Kai, go ahead with your question for Jimmy Akin.
Thank you, Mr. Akin. Thank you, Mr. Keller, for taking my call.
Happy
I really
to.
Appreciate it. I just wanted to say quickly, thank you for sending me your book, The Words of Mysterious Life. It's been a fantastic read, and I've been really enjoying it. But my question has to do with a part of a conversation I had with a rabbi in which I asked him from his perspective, when the Messianic Age comes, how will we identify the Messiah, and what will the Messianic Age look like? And he gave me a lot of things. But one thing that stuck with me was a prophecy from Jeremiah chapter 31, mm-hmm. in which God talks about the New Covenant. And in the first two verses, 31 to 34, those are the verses. And in the first two verses, he's talking about the New Covenant and that he will bring a New Covenant. And in the second two verses, he's talking about what it will look like. And he says in those verses that he will put the knowledge of the law within the hearts of his people and that no longer, I'm quoting it, no longer shall each man teach his neighbor and each his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me. And what he was saying, the rabbi, was that the interpretation is that when the Messianic Age comes, there will be an explicit knowledge of God. It will be explicit. You won't need to teach people about it. You won't need to have doubts about it. And I was wondering how that fits in, because effectively it is kind of obvious that this doesn't exist yet, right? There are atheists and agnostics and theists who have doubts all the time, right? So where does this fit in? What is the Christian response to this?
Okay, sure. So the prophecy in Jeremiah 31 of the New Covenant has been fulfilled. It was fulfilled in Jesus Christ, and he announced that fact. That's why on the evening of the Last Supper, when he takes the cup, he says, this is the New Covenant in my blood. And he's referring back to the incident at Mount Sinai where Moses instituted a covenant with God and the Israelites, and he took blood and splashed some of it on the altar, but then also applied it to the people. And Jesus is saying, now I'm fulfilling the prophecy from Jeremiah of there being a new covenant, and just like Moses had blood to institute the covenant, now I'm instituting the new covenant using my own blood, which is both offered to God on the cross and is also applied to the people in the Eucharist when they receive the body and blood of our Lord. So Jesus is clear that he's fulfilling this. Did Jesus intend, though, to institute an age where literally nobody would have to be taught anything about God? Well, clearly not, because he then commissions the disciples to go out and teach people. So he was not instituting an age where everybody knew everything about God and it was blindingly obvious. This was still an age in which evangelization would be needed and catechesis would be needed. But there is also a real sense, because the Holy Spirit has been given to us now, that the relationship and the knowledge we have of God is deeper than it was before. If you go back and you look at the period of the Old Testament, people in the land of Israel, and that's really who we're talking about. We're not talking about everybody in the world knowing about God in this prophecy. In Jeremiah was thinking of God's people are not going to need to be taught in the same way that they were, to where a Jewish person might say to another Jewish person, "Know the Lord."
Oh,
you know, yeah. Back then, most people in Israel were not well educated religiously. They didn't have an effective catechesis system. There was kind of an acknowledgement that, yeah, we're Jews and we have this God, but there was lots of worshiping of other gods going on. And recent archaeological finds, I was reading an article about this recently, recent archaeological finds show that both in Israel and in Judah, they weren't keeping kosher too well. We've dug up their garbage dumps, and guess what? They were eating all kinds of non-kosher animals.
Pig bones.
Yeah, including pig bones. So there was a low level of knowledge and observance at the time, and it was really kind of the spiritual elite, you know, the prophets and the priests, who were the most knowledgeable and the most observant, and there wasn't a general diffusion of knowledge in the populace beyond just the, yeah, I'm a Jew, and so we have this God, but, oh, we can have other gods too. Uh-huh. And so now in our age, now that the Holy Spirit has been given, the situation is quite different. It's not as pristine as you might guess from reading the prophecy, but you have to recognize prophecy gets fulfilled in ways that are not fully expected. And oftentimes prophets use hyperbole. That's a standard mode of speech we find in the Bible. It's a standard mode of speech in prophecy. Oftentimes they use exaggeration to make a point. And that's what Jeremiah is doing here. Now, having said that, there is a sense in which there is a future fulfillment of this prophecy that will be pristine, because after the second coming, everybody's going to know about God, including atheists. But that doesn't stop there from having been a preliminary fulfillment that Jesus announced at the time of his coming.
And we are due for a break, Kai. So thank you very, very much for the question. And I'm glad you enjoyed Jimmy's book. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin right after this.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN podcasts are the perfect companion for busy Catholics everywhere. Your favorite EWTN programs are waiting for you to listen to on your time. With on-demand access to audio, you can pause and pick up right where you left off, anytime, anywhere. Just subscribe by using your mobile device's free podcast app. Find old favorites or discover something new. EWTN Podcasts, they're waiting for you.
I don't want to forget to mention Catholic Answers School of Apologetics summer enrollment drive is on all this month, and we're closing in on 7,000 enrollments. During the month of June, we're running this enrollment drive that you can get a full course for $50 and a mini course for just $25. Lots of great courses, and a statistic that I am just delighted to see. Students now have taken the course, or at least one of the courses, in at least 40 countries around the world. That is wonderful. Reaching around the world with School of Apologetics. Check it out at schoolofapologetics.com or visit shop.catholic.com and visit the School of Apologetics category there. Get your full courses for $50 this summer and start your journey. Jimmy Akin, our guest this hour. It's open forum. Lots of folks on the line. We go now to Shreveport, Louisiana. Connor is listening on the new and improved Catholic Answers Live app. Connor, delighted to have you. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hi. I have a question. I guess it's more about a philosophical question about the language of rites.
Mm-hmm.
And so most modern speakers, they use the term human rights. But to me, human rights often, and this is even from the world, I forgot what it's called, but basically UN, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they define the origin of human rights coming from a king, but natural rights comes from, depending on if you're an atheist or a Christian, comes from either God or human nature. And so, and that seems more concrete and correct to me. So mm-hmm. My question is, as a Catholic, do I have to believe in human rights, or can I just believe in natural rights?
Well, this is really a matter of semantics. What I can tell you is that the church definitely uses rights language, and it recognizes that there is a distinction between civil rights, which are rights that are recognized in civil law, and other rights that are inherent in human beings. And they're there because of God. God endowed human beings with a special dignity that entails certain rights, or that results in people having certain rights, and it's also built into human nature, which of course comes from God, that we need to treat each other in certain ways. And so if you do certain things to another human being, you are committing an evil, you are wronging that person, and thus you're violating their rights. So the term human rights is, the way I would take it, simply a right that human beings have naturally. Natural rights and human rights are going to be the same thing. Now, it's true that after World War II, the United Nations did formulate a document known as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And that I haven't looked in that document, certainly not recently, to see what it conceives of the basis of human rights as. But the term human rights is not offensive to Catholic sensibilities as long as you recognize that these rights derive from God and not the state. A right that derives from the state would be a civil right, but a right that derives from human nature, which is God-given, is derived from God. And so I wouldn't look at the terms human rights and natural rights as opposed to each other. I would say natural human rights are a thing.
Connor, thank you very much for that interesting question. Appreciate it. Lots and lots of folks on the line, so I hope that was helpful to you. You got to keep moving. 888-318-7884, our number. We go now to Omaha, Nebraska. Josh, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. You are next, Josh. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Hi.
Hi, Josh.
Thanks for taking my call. I waited specifically to ask this question to Jimmy, so I'm excited to hear his answer. But I've been dating a girl, and she is a practicing Catholic as well as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sort of been having these, like, premonitionary dreams, like a friend of hers that she hadn't seen in a couple years. She had a dream right before seeing them that they were going to be expecting a child, and she said that it was going to be a boy. And she saw them the next day and said, you know, not to be weird, but I had this dream that you're going to be having a child. And they were like, well, we haven't been telling anybody, but we are actually expecting, and it's a boy.
What?
And then other times that she's had like these ideas or thoughts that like she was going to see people that she has nothing to do with, like you know, ex-boyfriends or whoever, and then we'll see them in very random places that same day. And so I was just curious as to what, and she was actually too nervous to call, but I was quite interested to kind of know what the, you know, church's stance is on those things, if that's a bad thing, if that's a good thing, and I guess what Mr. Aiken's thoughts were on that topic. So.
Sure. So the church doesn't have an official stance on this. It is a question that is basically up to theologians to discuss and discern, okay, do we have, and theologians and scientists actually, to, you know, discern, is there anything natural that could explain this? And some situations like this where you may dream of something or you may have a feeling you're going to hear from someone, some of that can just be coincidence. You know, there are statistically, there are just going to be coincidences in life where you have a planet with 7 billion people on it, or in the case of America, a country with 330 million people in it. There are going to be weird coincidences that happen to some of those millions and billions of people. And it and so just because you have what seems to be a premonition, either in a waking state or in a dream state, that doesn't mean it's not one of these coincidences. In order to establish that precognition, which is the supposed psychic ability to tell the future or perceive facts about the future, in order to show that that's a real thing, it would need to be beyond random chance. And most people, when they have these premonitions, don't do statistical studies of their own life and you know, try to figure out, well, what number of coincidences would I expect to happen among how many people? And so it tends to be anecdotal. Having said that, the idea that there are scientists known as parapsychologists who study this, and some of them claim that there are studies that show that precognition is a real thing. However, skeptics dispute that, so that's a matter of controversy. In terms of a theological perspective on it, the idea that humans might have weak natural abilities like precognition is not foreign to Catholic thought. Saint Augustine, a doctor of the church, thought that we do. St. Thomas Aquinas, another doctor of the church, thought that we do. They both thought that humans have a weak natural ability that allows them on occasion to pick up information about the future naturally without having to have it be revealed by God. St. Thomas Aquinas referred to this as natural prophecy, to distinguish it from the supernatural prophecy that God gives. And one of the characteristics that St. Thomas suggested about natural prophecy was that it's only probabilistic. It's not infallible the way divine revelation is, because since this is a natural human ability, it has the fallibility that humans do in this state of life. So if you get a premonition, according to Thomas Aquinas, don't treat it like it's infallibly certain. It could be a probabilistic prediction of the future, what's likely to happen, but it's not a certainty that it's going to happen. He also said that this could manifest in particular in dreams, but he was aware that other things can also cause dreams. Sometimes a dream can bring about a self-fulfilling prophecy. Sometimes it could be a coincidence. Sometimes it could be a dream sent from God. And sometimes it could be an evil spirit influencing you in a dream. Unfortunately, he didn't really distinguish the different ways he didn't really discuss how to distinguish which is which. But I would say it's an interesting phenomenon. It's not something to be automatically scared of. Unless there's levitating objects and weird stuff going on, I wouldn't suspect demons involved. It could be, as St. Thomas would say, a natural prophecy that someone is having. It's an interesting phenomenon to think about and to study, but I wouldn't put a whole lot of weight in it. I would say I myself have had dreams of that nature. Back when I was in junior high, I had a dream that was just flat out exactly something. It was as if I'd seen it on videotape.
Wow.
That happened the next day. And fortunately, I told someone about that dream before it happened. But I don't know that we have time before the break for me to tell that story.
Do you want to give it a try? Or no? We only have 30 seconds.
Well, maybe when we come back for the break.
All right. Josh, just because I'm curious, because Jimmy brought it up, any levitating, any objects levitating or anything like that?
Unfortunately, no. But she's even kind of tried to test it by, giving people like a restaurant suggestion and then going to a different restaurant and then them ending up at the same restaurant as her. It's very interesting. She talks about like seeing her deceased grandparents and dreams a lot as well. So even ones that like she didn't know before she was 5 years old. So very interesting kind of.
Yeah, Josh, we're going to have to go to a break now, but if you contact me privately by email, I'll see what further assistance I can be.
Thanks, Josh. I want to hear Jimmy Akin's dream story when we come back right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Call now, Catholic Answers Live.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
If you spend any time on Twitter, Facebook, or mainstream media, you're probably familiar with the litany of slogans that skeptics employ to rescue you from the foolish belief that God exists. The constant onslaught seems to leave people with the idea that they have no alternative but to embrace atheism. How can a Christian respond? In One Less God Than You, John DeRosa breaks down 20 of the most common atheist challenges and shows you how to craft effective answers. Atheism is more aggressive and widespread than ever. Read One Less God Than You and prepare yourself to respond with the joyful truth that God is real. To get your copy of One Less God Than You, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Matt Swaim here. Join us tomorrow for the Sunrise Morning Show as we celebrate the solemnity of the Most Sacred Heart of Jesus with Father Thomas Daly, the author of Behold This Heart. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Well, you didn't leave that mystery for very long, Darren. Mystery solved. Yes, we are having the groovy music today. Thank you, Darren. It's always good to get a little groovy music in, especially when Jimmy's about to tell you a story about a middle school dream he had that came true.
Junior high. We didn't have middle school in my town.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's funny how it all became middle school. But almost everybody when I was a kid went to junior high. I don't remember anybody going to middle school.
Yeah, I think it varies by area.
Yeah, probably. All right. So you're in junior high.
Yeah. So I was in an art class and I was working on a given project and I went home and, went to sleep. And that night I dreamed that I was in art class and I dreamed that I was painting on a horizontal surface.
Okay.
Instead of, on an easel, but on, I was like painting something on a table. And I dreamed that I was painting with green and purple tempera paint.
Mm-hmm.
And I dreamed that this guy I knew who was also in the art class named Lyndon, who didn't really like me, came up and saw what I was painting and said, "What do you think you're doing?" And so
that's very specific.
Yeah. So that was the dream. And so the next morning I was talking to a friend of mine named Charlie and I told Charlie the dream and Charlie was also in the art class And so then after I tell Charlie the dream, we go to art class, and our teacher announces that she's taking us off the projects we were previously working on and is going to have the whole class start painting these cutouts for an upcoming school fair. You know, the kind where you put your face through the hole and they take a picture?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so she's got these big sheets of cardboard that are too big to put on an easel, so they have to be put on tables.
Right.
And she assigns, and so I had no idea this thing was coming up. This is unexpected. There's no way I could have predicted this. And so she assigns us to paint on these big pieces of cardboard that we have to put on tables, and she assigns me to do a cutout of the Incredible Hulk. So I'm painting with green tempera paint for his skin and purple tempera paint for his pants. And as Charlie's watching me do this, Lyndon comes up and says, "What do you think you're doing?"
No way.
And Charlie's mouth drops open.
Yeah. So, Charlie was scared of you after that. Oh,
no,
spooky but, Jimmy Hagan.
But it was, I mean, I was glad I had told someone. This was, I mean, I've had other dreams that were suggestive of the future, but this was like videotape.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
That's why it doesn't, it seems like probability would not explain that, but I don't know. That's really wild. I'm the opposite of that, Jimmy. When people ever talk about their psychic abilities, I feel like if there are natural psychic abilities, I don't have any of them. I don't have any of that.
There's like, also a...
And I'm constantly surprised as a consequence.
Well, like. So in the parapsychological community, there is a question about, you know, does everybody have some degree of this ability or not? And at least among parapsychologists, the standard view is that everybody has some of this ability, but it may need to be trained, except there's a complication. Now, you know Jesus' parable of the sheep and the goats, right?
Right.
So the sheep are the ones on Jesus' right hand. The goats are the ones on his left hand. This is, by the way, where we get the phrases leftist and rightist.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the political left and right is based on the sheep and the goats. But in the parable, the sheep are the good ones and the goats are the not so good ones. Well, one of the things that parapsychologists started to uncover in the 20th century, at least this is the claim, is that there are, you know, some people who perform above chance on tests of psychic functioning, and then there are people who just keep giving the wrong answers in a way that also exceeds chance.
Yeah, like that doesn't seem random.
And, yeah, and so there was back in the 1940s, there was a parapsychologist named Gertrude Schmeidler who applied the sheep and the goats to this. What she claimed was that the people who perform above chance have confidence in the reality of psychic functioning. The people who perform consistently below chance don't believe or don't have confidence in the reality of psychic functioning.
And so
this performance well below chance is now called psi missing. And the claim is that the doubters who are consistently, regularly below chance are actually sabotaging themselves psychically because they don't believe in this, they don't want to see this proved right, and so they are consistently sabotaging themselves subconsciously. That's the idea anyway.
But are there some people that are just at
in the middle, yeah.
Because that's where I would say, because I used to do this thing, maybe all kids do this, I don't know, where I would take a deck of cards as a kid, and I would just stare at that deck of cards trying to know what the top card was. You know, like, I don't know, it's definitely the Queen of Hearts. And I'd turn it over and it'd be the Seven of Diamonds. And, you know, like, it didn't seem to have any correlation at all.
Yeah.
Like my...
Well, did you keep statistics and do it 1,000 times?
No, I didn't. I was a lazy child, Jimmy.
Okay.
I tried it like 3 times. I gave up, all right? 888-3187-884, our number. Let's go to St. Petersburg, Russia. Oh, no, Florida. Sorry. Watching, listening on the Catholic Answers Live new and improved app. Joe in St. Petersburg, you are up, Joe. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Das svidaniya, tovarish.
Thanks for having me.
If you speak,
thanks for having me, Jim.
Oh, I was waiting for some Russian to come back at us, but we're happy.
I was going to say this is Vladimir, but my name was Joe, so it wasn't a good sell.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Go ahead, Joe.
Comrade Joe.
My question is for you, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Comrade Joe.
So my question for you, Jimmy, is this. My wife and I were talking the other day. She kind of brought up an interesting topic that I actually have never heard growing up in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. We talk about euthanasia a lot and cremation being an issue. But, you know, one thing that I have never heard any teachings or writings about is being an organ donor. And she kind of was talking about how can you separate your heart from yourself and have it still be beating in someone else's body? So I wasn't sure if there has ever been any official teachings or thoughts
on organ donation.
Regarding.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
So organ donation is something that really kind of came along in the 20th century, because prior to that, I mean, you could do blood transfusions a little bit, but prior to the 20th century, it really wasn't safe, and that meant it wasn't really possible. Early in the 20th century, there was some skepticism among Catholic moral theologians about, is this going to be morally permissible? But by the reign of John Paul II, the church had come to the position that, yes, this is okay in principle. It's okay in principle to donate organs, provided it's voluntary and things like that. It can be a meritorious thing to do. But there are, as with anything, some limitations. One of the things that you can do is donate an organ, even when you're alive, you can donate an organ that you don't need to survive. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you could donate a kidney to someone, and as long as your other kidney is healthy, you can survive with just the one kidney. So that kind of thing is just fine. On the other hand, you cannot, while you're alive, donate an organ that you need in order to survive. So you could not, as a living person, donate your heart. Now, this leads us to a question about heart donation specifically, because at least at the present state of affairs, they want your heart beating when they take it out. And so the question is, are you really dead at the time they remove your heart in a typical heart transplant? And during the reign of John Paul II, the claim is, on the one hand, the claim is that if you're brain dead, meaning your brain has lost the ability to organize the functions of your body, and that's irretrievable, it's not going to be fixed, it's not going to be healed, and not just that you're a vegetable, but that your brain
that's very
dead,
important. Yeah.
Then you are actually dead. The organizing principle in your body is gone, and so even if your heart is continuing to beat, just like there can be cellular activity elsewhere as your body is in the process of shutting down, you know, your hair may still be growing a little bit while you're dying. Even after you're dead, I mean, not all of your metabolism shuts down at once. You could then, if you're really dead, if brain death is real death, you could cut out someone's heart and transplant it to somebody else. But there is a question about, is brain death real death? Now, John Paul II said that, okay, provided you're really sure of it, that you're not just fudging it because you want to harvest a heart from a person who's just mentally incapacitated or in a coma,
yeah,
or something like that, provided the person is really most sincerely brain dead, you could do this, that would be death. But a number of Catholic moral theologians questioned that, and in the reign of Benedict XVI, he allowed further exploration on that question. So I would say this is still an open question of, does brain death constitute real death, quite apart from the practical issue of, are they just going to cut you up early because they want to?
Yeah.
Personally, I'm not comfortable donating my heart, but I await further clarification from the magisterium.
Thanks, Joe, Comrade Joe, very much for the call. I have to say, Jimmy, I get quite a bit of email from some pro-life activists who are quite concerned about how human life is treated at the end of life, and that there are many people, in their view, who are not dead, whose organs are being harvested. And I don't have a way to judge that. I just know that it is definitely a concern that's out there.
Right. But it is debated, and yeah, Catholic moral theologians who are Orthodox have taken both positions.
Again, thanks, Joe. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin right after this.
Hello, this is Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of San Francisco. Keep your dial tuned to Catholic Answers Live.
He is honored by the church as one of the greatest enemies of clergy sexual abuse.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
In his time, St. Peter Damian fought against the many vices of contemporary clergy, especially sexual abuses among the clergy. In 1051, he wrote the Book of Gomorrah that is still considered essential reading for fighting abuse today. He died in 1072.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, open forum. Jimmy Akin with us both hours today, and it'll be open forum for both hours. We're joined now by the greatest organizer of Catholic events in the world, Erica Olson. Hello, Mrs.
Hi.
Olson.
No pressure.
Well, that's the way I think
Challenge
of you.
Accepted.
I liked how Nathaniel introduced you.
Seems like you're starting to play a video game.
I know.
Challenge
let's do it.
Accepted.
Wouldn't that be fun, an event planning video game? I wonder what that would look like.
A event planning video game. It'd just be one person angry at everyone else in the game.
That's most video games, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
That's
I don't
true.
Know. I'm not very familiar with most
we'll
of them.
We'll do like an event planning slash like first person. What is
shooter.
It? Shooter. Shooter game.
Look, don't give anybody any ideas because we're talking about the Catholic Answers Conference coming up, which you can find out all about at CatholicAnswersConference.com. CatholicAnswersConference.com. What's the news? What's the haps?
Yeah, what's the haps? We're inching towards your goal of 1,000 people.
I want to say this, and I've already told Jimmy earlier, and I have just a severely limited ability to have any premonition at all, at least as far as I know. But I am predicting 1,000 people for the conference.
For this particular thing,
it's not just
thing,
a hope
mystic.
Or a goal. That's a premonition I have. 1,000 people.
1,000 people. I like that you have the enthusiasm. Uh-huh. You know, it's been a hard year and a half.
Yep, it has.
And we're finally getting back to in-person events. And so we have started late and we're ramping up and you're all invited. And it's going to be the Catholic party of the year, I think, because nobody else is doing it. So come and join us. Nobody else is doing it. Everybody's still doing virtual events. This is going to be in person. Jimmy's going to be calling square dancing mm-hmm. on the very first night of the event. It's going to be great. We have a ton of social opportunities to just come and be with like-minded people for 4 days.
Yeah.
We have a stellar lineup.
Yeah, great speakers.
We have all of our own apologists, so Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Carlo, and then our newest apologist, which I'm really excited about, Joe Heschmeyer is going to be there too. We added him to the docket. And then we're having Bishop Joe Strickland from Tyler, Texas. Paul Gondreau is coming. Sister Maristella is coming. Father Paul Check will be giving 2 talks during the lunchtime hours. I mean, this is a huge, awesome program.
It is really awesome. We're going to do the radio show twice, so we'll do Catholic Answers Live twice. There's the panel discussion with all of our speakers, which people say...
Yeah, the audience gets to submit all the questions.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just such a great party to come to every year. I love putting it on. I love meeting everybody.
But you should have like an early bird special, something where if you get your ticket early...
Well, it's funny you should say that, Cy.
Wait, there's more.
Wait. We have early bird pricing going on until the end of this month. So early bird pricing expires July 2nd. If you enter the word early, you get $30 off your tickets. This is for either ticket, the talks only ticket, or the full conference. Full
either
conference
way, you're getting
includes
30 bucks off.
The banquet dinner, mm-hmm. which is also a great time. Either ticket is $30 off if you enter the code word early at checkout. So go to CatholicAnswersConference.com, enter code word early for your $30 discount, and come have the time of your life at this great Catholic party.
And the probably the best thing about it, the entire thing has a Jesus theme. It's all about Jesus.
Yes, it's all about Jesus this time. We've got some amazing talks. Trent Horn, I believe, is going to talk about counterfeit Christ in relation to one of his books. Jimmy, yours is
on the basics of Christ.
Yes,
on
and what we believe, right, as Catholics. So it's going to be a great time. The talks are top notch. I'm excited. You're excited.
I'm excited.
Let's get everyone excited. Tell all your friends. If you're coming, bring your friends. Like, tell everyone. We want to pack this house.
Just go to CatholicAnswersConference.com. There's $30 off on the ticket, which is not very expensive to start with. I think that's one of the things that we're proud about. That ticket
It's a steal.
Yeah.
It's a steal.
And so you can get $30 off whether you do the banquet or just the talks only ticket. Mm-hmm. You can get $30 off. And there's a special room rate, $164 a night, which for the Hyatt in La Jolla is a great, great rate.
That's a great deal. It's probably more than 50% off.
Come on, we're going to have a great time.
Come have a great time in San Diego. There's plenty to do, lots to see, and you get to come and have a great time with 1,000 of your fellow Catholics.
999 others besides yourself. We'll see you there. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Thanks, Erica.
Thanks, Cy.
Before we go back to the phones, I was just thinking about something.
Yeah.
It relates to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So I've mentioned on the show before that I often find that I'm thinking about or reading about something shortly before I'm asked about it.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and I've always looked at that as a kind of divine providence, you know. I mean, I don't know what the causation is. It could be coincidence, could be premonition, it could be God poking me.
Yeah,
you know,
getting
you ready. Could be my guardian angel, whatever. I haven't worried about that. But it occurred to me that within the last 24 hours, I was reading about Cy missing and the fact that it was Gertrude Schmeidler who named the sheep and the goats effect. And then within 24 hours, you're talking about your own abilities and that suddenly becomes relevant.
Yeah.
That's
wild, Jimmy.
One more data.
But you have mentioned that before, mm-hmm. that sometimes you feel like the call comes and you're like, wow, I was just reading about that. Mm-hmm. And like you said, could be your guardian angel.
It could also be coincidence. In order to settle that question, I'd have to keep a detailed log. And I'm not sure how I'd test the null hypothesis, which is in statistics, it's just due to chance.
Yeah.
That's what the null hypothesis is.
888-318-7884, our number, John in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You are next, John, listening on the new and improved Catholic Answers Live app. Go ahead with your question, John.
Hi, Cy. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, John.
Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
So I was raised Baptist, and my family has never been the most devout, but my church was pretty anti-Catholic. Mm-hmm. So my family only knows like the skewed version of the Catholic Church that was preached against not every Sunday, but you know. After almost a year of research, listening to your show and praying, I've decided to take steps to join the church.
Hey.
My fiance, who is a cradle Catholic, and I are visiting my family this weekend, and I plan on telling them about this decision. Hmm. Since we're going to Mass on Sunday when we're there, my grandma already knows she had the beans spilled to her about my decision, mm-hmm. and she's very disappointed, just because she's very Baptist.
Yeah.
So do you have any advice for telling them about this decision without feeling alienated from my family?
Well, if my first question is, are you sure you want to tell them and tell them right now? Now that's a decision that you have to make. When I was coming into the Catholic Church, there were certain family members who were of a prior generation who I knew would not react well. And rather than tell them directly, I let them find out through the grapevine. And that way we avoided any particularly tense confrontations over the issue. So that is an option. I mean, your grandmother already knows. She'll presumably continue to bean spill, and other members in your family will find out. And if there are particular members that would have a real problem with it, that could be the best way for that member to find out. On the other hand, there are additional options, like you're going to be going to Mass with your fiancé. You don't have to announce, I'm considering becoming Catholic, just saying, hey, we're going to Mass now, see y'all later. is another way of letting them know without having to say, guess what?
Yeah.
So there are some there are these low-key options that are available. Having said that, it also can be perfectly fine and even an evangelistic opportunity to say, I wanted to let you know about this decision I've made. In that case, my inclination would be to be as low-key about it as possible, you know, be relaxed, be friendly, just say, this is something I've been thinking about for a long time. I'm not doing this on the spur of the moment. I've really been doing a lot of research and study. And if you ever have questions, I'll be happy to answer them or find the answers if I don't know it. I wanted to let you know about this because I love you. And this is something that's going on in my life. And I want you to be informed about what's happening with me. And don't worry, I still love you. I still believe in Jesus. I still believe in God. I'm trusting in Jesus for my salvation. And I am not repudiating Jesus. I view this as going even deeper with Jesus. And even if you may not agree, I understand that too, but understand I do love you and I do love Jesus. And I hope that that you'll pray for me.
What do you think of that, John?
That sounds good. That's what I thought about.
Okay.
They know that I've been going to Mass with my fiancé, so...
Oh, then there probably won't be a surprise.
...that I would like to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they just think that I'm no longer going to a Baptist church, so I just feel like we're getting married in a Catholic church. I'm eventually going to start RCIA. I should probably tell them sooner than later so they just don't feel like they were left out of things.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I think that's a good way to go about it.
And since these are, you know, available online as videos and as audio podcasts, you can always review that little speech I composed off the top of my head and mine it for useful bits.
John, let me ask you this. Do you have a copy of Jimmy's book, The Bible is a Catholic Book?
I do not.
Well, I would like to send you a copy of that as a kind of a welcome home gift.
You know, what also could be useful is The Words of Eternal Life, because that's designed for anybody to read and have a basics of the Christian and Catholic faith. And that might be something that John might find useful to share with his relatives.
We'll send both of those to you, John. Thank you so much. I guess I was thinking if he could just sit on the front porch reading the Bible as a Catholic book, and that would get the idea out. No, I'm just kidding, John. Maybe don't do it that way. Hang on. We'll get your address, and we'll send you a copy of those two books, if you'd like. Just hang on and give those to Marie, who's on the phones.
Let's go for it.
Shall we? All right. Silas in Bentonville, Arkansas, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Go ahead, Silas, with your question.
Hello, guys. I'm a clinical psychologist, and I've been an atheist most of my life, and I became a Christian about 5 years ago after doing a lot of research.
Praise God.
And actually, I became a Catholic after I read the Bible as a Catholic book. That was the real
wonderful.
And my question is reviving... Dante's Divine Comedy. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of it. I've read it several times. I think it's outstanding. But I've always wondered if the church ever had anything to say about it, if they ever had a response or if there was ever any kind of teaching regarding it from the church. I can never seem to find any. And then secondly, just what does Jimmy have to say about it personally?
Well, I haven't read the Divine Comedy myself. I mean, I know about it. I know the three-part structure. I know in general what's going on. I know some specific instances from it, but I haven't read the whole thing. Incidentally, if you're interested in that, you might want to check out some of the other related works like Inferno by Larry Niven and Jerry Pournelle. Which are based on the Divine Comedy. But in terms of church response, now this is primarily a matter of culture, but the church has an appreciation for culture and works of art, including literary works like this. And in fact, there have been several church documents devoted to Dante and to the Divine Comedy. In 1921, Pope Benedict XV issued an encyclical called In Praeclara Summorum, that dealt with Dante. More recently, I want to say John Paul II, I believe, issued an apostolic letter, Candor Lucis Aeternae, that also dealt with Dante. But there have been several documents like that. If you go to vatican.va and search on Dante, they'll come up.
Hey, thanks, Silas. Thanks very much for the question, and welcome home. That's a beautiful story you shared with us. Thank you for it. Jimmy Akin's our guest. Jimmy Akin is senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, and here to take your questions for the next hour as well. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you haven't dialed yet, 888-318-7884. The number here, 888-31-TRUTH. Right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin right after this.